fit pencil in, I guess, right? Well, or that was the foxhole.
That was the foxhole one. But...
This Amateur Radio Roundtable is brought to you in part by ICOM America.
All right, welcome everybody to Amateur Radio Roundtable. I'm Tom Edlin, W5KUB, and we're just outside of Memphis, Tennessee, where it's hot again tonight. We've had some funny weather. Boy, it rained really, really, really hard yesterday, and the sun was shining bright. I don't know how that happened, but some funny weather going on here. Hey, today is August the 4th, 2020. Man, we're in August already. It's hard to believe. This would have been a month that we go to the Huntsville Ham Fest, but of course it was canceled, so we're not able to go there this year. We will be there again next year, though. If you're listening out there on shortwave on 5130, you can watch the show if you have internet access. You can go to W5KUB.com and you can watch the show. Join us in a chat room and chat with us there. And if you are listening out there on shortwave, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email to tom@W5KUB.com. Tell us where in the world you are and how you're hearing us. And we'd just love to hear from you. So let's see what we got going on tonight. We got Dave is out. Dave is traveling in Phoenix. Martin is out. He's got some medical issues he's working on tomorrow. But most of the gang is back here, and we're going to have a good time tonight. We're going to talk a little about Whisper in a little while. I'll update you on our next balloon launch. And I'm going to talk a little about our satellite operation. We're going to get that going again. But let's first go out to Wyoming, and let's talk to Katie and Dwayne. How you guys doing out there?
Yeah, doing great, Tom. Glad to be here.
Hi, Tom. Hi, everybody. Hey. Great to be back. This is kind of awkward.
All right.
We can't quite figure out what we're doing here.
Well,
how about that?
Yeah, that looks okay.
Yeah,
that's fine. That's fine. All right, so welcome back. I know you've been out a little bit there, and I know you're a little under the weather again. You're not catching this. You're not catching this COVID stuff, are you?
No, I've been tested to be negative. It's just, obnoxious. It's just a bronchial thing that doesn't want to let go. So
yeah. Well, that stuff, you know, goes around, you know? Hey.
It does, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But other than that, everything's great around here.
Well, that is good. We're so glad to have you back on here tonight with your smiling face and everything. And I see you have Santa Claus with you tonight.
I did. I brought my hippie husband here.
Yeah. Now, have you talked to him about getting a haircut?
No. This is the I don't care hair.
Yeah.
Really? Can you even get it?
I'm
retired. I like it. It's long and curly. And
well, are the barbershops?
She has hair.
Are the barbershops even open out there?
Yeah. You just have to wear. He's actually was at the salon a couple of weeks ago. You just have to, depending on what you're doing, wearing a mask, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah.
And our stylists, they all wear a mask. So
he needs a little trimming down around, you know, he needs a little trimming like right about here, and that's where the mask goes, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, good to see you guys, and we're gonna talk about something that you've been working on here in just a minute.
Yeah.
Glenn Popiel. How you doing, Glenn?
You have known me for how many years, and you still fight with my last name.
Popiel.
No, you have it right. It's Popiel, but by gosh, you have to think about it and work on it.
It's a hard one, man, to get that. We're going to have to get your name changed. It's just, I don't know, man.
Yeah, just call me Joe.
Joe, yeah, okay. What have you been up to, man?
Oh, just keeping this thing busy for one.
Yeah.
I've been doing a couple QST reviews this week. I've been working on that little Arduino Explorer board I showed you last week, finishing that up, and then going to be starting on some of the book projects here real soon. But outside of that, I've just been staying indoors, letting it be hot outside, not worrying about it.
Well, are they going to call you back to physically be back at work anytime soon?
We hope so. Actually, I'm working probably 1 to 2 days a week. Saw this in the chat room. There, this will help you spell my name.
Pocket Fisherman. Okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Glenn Pocket.
Yeah. But I've been going on the road probably 1 to 2 days a week and working in the school districts. But it's going to be interesting. They just had an announcement from the governor today about masks are mandatory in the school. And I can just picture a bunch of first graders following mask and social distancing protocol. It's going to be interesting, to say the least.
All right. Well, I see a note in the chat room. It said, Katie and Glenn, congratulations on joining the President's Club in ARRL.
When did I join the President's Club?
I don't know. Maybe you don't know it.
Yeah, I think it's Katie and Dwayne, not Katie and Glenn.
Yeah, that's probably what it is. That's probably what it is.
I'm not sure what that is, though.
Well, maybe you're in a President's Club.
I mean, we're in the Maxim Society, but that's...
Yeah, we've been there for a few years.
A couple of years.
Well, look at there. You guys were just...
I'm going to have to Google it.
You guys were awarded an award tonight that you didn't know you had, right?
Right.
Let me move that. Okay. All right. Well, you're gonna have to Google it and see what.
Yeah.
What the benefits
the only
are.
The thing I've been in QSD for has been the pictures of the Nixie that was in Steve Ford's column.
Yep. Yeah.
Last month. That's the only time I've been in QSD since April.
Huh.
All right. I'm having to flip buttons on Zoom again to make you work. There we go. Okay. All right. Well, very good, Glenn. Hey, guys, we've got on screen there Jim Willis, KX4TD, out of Blairsville, Georgia. He's coming in remotely to us tonight from Georgia, and he's going to be talking in a few minutes about Whisper and kind of going to explain to me how Whisper works and maybe even talk a little about the results I got. I did a little Whisper test, too. How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing great, Tom. I appreciate you having me on your program tonight. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what you got there on the Whisper.
All right. Boy, I'm having all kinds of trouble tonight with names. There we go. There's your name. Let me get your name up here on the...
Wonder if it's in QST.
There we go.
There it is.
All right. That way people know who you are. That's Jim Willis, KX4TD. And he'll be with us in just a few minutes there. All right. Well, Katie, why don't you tell us about something that you've been working on here? I think Dwayne has been helping you a little bit.
Yeah, he has been helping a little bit. So.
Yeah.
And for any of you guys that watch my Shack Chat on Fridays on Facebook or YouTube, this will be a bit of a repeat for you. But there'll probably be much better information since the guy who's actually doing the project is going to share with you. Oh, you got to enable screen sharing for me, boss.
Oh, okay.
Says you disabled it.
Well, all right.
That's because you missed so many shows. He didn't want you to come back.
I know. I don't blame
him. That's right.
Him.
Okay. All right. You're clear. You're clear okay. For takeoff.
All right. Let me. There we go. This is the one we want to share. Hopefully, I can see everything. Let me open up my.
What are you doing?
I'm trying to open up the Zoom window so I can see what we're doing.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait. Don't change anything. Is that tower leaning?
No.
It is a trick of the lenses. If you look, you'll see the 6 meter tower looks like it's leaning in as well.
Yeah, well, I thought maybe y'all had a wind coming from the west or something. I don't know, man.
We have wind coming all the time.
Oh, yeah. So this is basically we our most recent project has been to basically get all of our wires and junk buried underground. But I thought it started off by just kind of giving you guys an idea where we live. This over here is our 6 meter beam with seven element, right?
Seven elements on six.
On six. Wow. And then over here, this is our little satellite station antenna. And then, over here is the first tower we put up. That's the 50 footer. And that is?
It's a Rhone HDBX 48. So it's actually only 48 feet tall, but it's got a, six-foot pole sticking out of the top of it. So it makes it 54.
Right. And then the big guy here, that is what we consider tower two. And that's
tower one.
Oh, I got him backwards in that. For tonight's purposes, this is tower two.
hey, go through the number on the towers again and point at it. One, two, three, four for me. Is that one?
I'm going to show. That's the next slide, actually.
Oh, okay. Okay.
All right. So this one is the 100-ish foot, and that one's 100-ish.
It's 110.
Okay. All right. So anyway, just to give you an idea, and I know a lot of people think that, you know, we must have a lot of property. You see all this open space behind us. No, that's actually a ranch in the National Forest behind us. So am I going as crazy as it looks on my side, or is that just behind the scenes? Everything okay?
Yeah, it looks fine. Good. Looks fine.
All right. So I put together this little Google map of I did have it right there. Okay. So basically, and this is an older shot because you can see the tower here, tower two, but tower one's missing entirely. And that's our old roof. So, but just to give you an idea, here's our house. And over here, that's mom, WI7MOM, that lives. So when I say she lives next door, she literally lives next door.
Yeah.
And this part of the house right here, it was an addition. And so down below the ground is where we are here in the ham shack. So we have tower one is over here, which is the big guy. Tower two is over here. And then we've got the guy lines, which are in, you know, and obviously this is just me playing around. So this is not a perfect, you know, architectural engineered drawing. This is just me to give you an idea of what we're dealing with. Well, so the ham shack is here. We have a boatload of everything coming out of it and going to the two towers. And so basically, you know, for a few years now, every time we mow the lawn, I'm constantly, it's a feat of engineering just to get around everything. So we decided, all right, it's time to move it. So, and then this is just a shot from the backyard standing by one of those guy lines, just to kind of give you an idea looking at the two towers.
And no, Tom, the tower isn't leaning.
It's leaning here, man. It is leaning here.
So here is kind of what, as the project began, and you could see the grass grows, and then the wires kind of get buried, and then, you know, you have to yank them up, mow around them, anywho. But we borrowed a friend's tractor, Dan and 7WYO, and Dwayne got started on the project. So, and this is just kind of looking from one tower to the next to see all the wires laid out. And again, this is, you know, this is our view. It's not our yard, which, as I said to a friend yesterday, I'm like, it's really nice. It's almost like having this giant backyard, but I never have to mow it. And so we used some paint, figured out where the line was going to be that he was going to dig, and used some spray paint that I bought for one of my flamingos and put it to work. So Dwayne's here, and I'll let you explain what you were doing.
I'm digging a hole.
Okay, so that's what he was doing, digging a hole.
That's an easy explanation. Yeah.
But I had posted a couple pictures on Instagram over the weekend while we were doing this project, and Scott Wright, he's K0MD, he's the ham that's also a doctor, and he's working on the COVID study that's going on over at Mayo for the antibodies, I believe it is. Anyway, so he sends a picture, goes, why didn't you guys get a trencher? And then I sent back a picture. I'm like, see all those rocks? That's why we didn't get a trencher. Mm. Our yard is just so rocky.
Now, let me just be honest, did you hit any water pipes, sewer pipes, anything like that?
No. we live in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, so but you got I'm sure you have a well and a pipe that comes in from it, and you got a septic system.
Here's an interesting story for you. The 50-foot tower has 6 yards of concrete under the base of it. And so we had to dig that hole down to get all that concrete in. And I hired a backhoe guy to come in because this little backhoe won't dig as deep as I needed it to go. Mm-hmm. It'll only go about 40 inches deep or so. So, I mean, it's literally a little trenching backhoe. But we hired a big backhoe to come in, and while he was digging, he found a water line. Turns out that on the corner of our property is an abandoned well for the community, and he found the water line for that. It was a 5-inch cast iron pipe put in the ground in 1961. So when the backhoe hit it, it stopped. I had to get a saw and saw that pipe off to keep going.
Yeah.
Wow.
So this was, and what you went about 18 inches down?
Yeah, it's between a foot and 18 inches, just deep enough to get it out of the ground, right. You know, under the ground.
And then you have all this conduit. So the idea is you're not just slapping the wires down there. You're actually.
Right. Well, if you put it in conduit, then if you need to make a change, you can pull it back out without having to dig the hole again.
Makes sense. So here's the first one in. And again, you can see just what we're dealing with for soil and rocks and yard out here. And as it came along, this was, you know, it sticks up, and I'll have Dwayne explain in a minute why. But this is just kind of some rough, quick photos of the progress of getting all the, we had three different conduits that were laid down. Mm-hmm. And that was my proof that I actually helped. I showed up periodically and held something up while he was getting it laid down. But that was about the extent of all the work I did.
That's the most important part.
That's right.
Yeah. And that's me covering the hole back up.
Yeah.
All the pipes are in the ground now.
So that was day one.
Yeah, we put in three pipes. We put in one for the coax to go in, and then there's one that's going to be an AC power line running out to the towers, so we can have permanent power at the base of the tower.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a cat in the hole. I didn't know you had a picture of that.
Yeah.
But and the other is going to be for the Ethernet, because I am going to be doing some remote switching over Ethernet out to each one of those towers. So I've got coax, Ethernet, and power going out there.
Now, you know, you could have put wireless out there.
Yeah, the wireless is okay.
And we'll have to talk to Glenn about
that,
because
I need to do rotator control as well. And I don't do wireless rotator control.
Well, so we'll have to talk to Glenn about that. Now, just a quick question. Have you dug a trench over to your mom's house yet, Katie? I mean,
no.
Have you connected anything up over there? No.
No. Well, she has a 2-meter antenna up over there.
Okay.
Excuse me. And then this is just from the house over to the first antenna, and then which was harder to do because you're getting close to the house.
Yeah, it was also very short span. I couldn't get the tractor to stretch out between the two pieces long enough, so
I
wound up having to dig it like sideways.
I actually am standing in the stairwell going into the shack trying to get that shot, but then it's all covered up, so that's basically, you know, right now that's kind of our backyard. I went out and grabbed a couple more photos of what we're looking at. We're kind of spreading out some, we had this old rock pile from when we dug that tower, and so the conduits, as he was mentioning, you know, there's the pieces that come up on the ends to each of the towers, because what's going to actually ultimately end up there?
We're going to put 24 by 24 by, I've got three boxes. So they're AC control boxes or industrial control boxes that are going to go on the towers, and all these coaxes and stuff go into the boxes, and then I'll be able to do my switching and so forth inside the boxes rather than out in the weather.
Right, and I got a picture of, oops.
Who's that?
That doesn't belong there. So then that's what's coming out of our house right now.
Oh,
so there's the window
problem.
And the door to our shack.
You got a lot of cables coming out.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not a believer in multiband antennas. I really believe in monoband antennas, especially when you got three radio stations. It's beneficial to have single band antennas so that you can share those antenna, share the tower without having to worry about the antennas. Makes filtering easier too.
Yep.
So that's part. Now the next part will be, after he gets back from a work trip, will be putting all the wires together and into the boxes and all of that stuff. But that was, you know, it was just one of those projects. It's just, you know, you have to plan a weekend and just get it done. It's, you know, we've been trying to do it for what, like 8 years now or something.
In past shows, you've seen the control center of the shack, where it's a where I have the PLC over in the corner, doing all the antenna switching and rotating and choices of filters. All that's going out to the tower, so it'll get out of the shack, and you know it'll clean things up in here a lot too, as well as only have one wire. Two mm-hmm. wires going out of the side of the house instead of
three dozen. That's yeah. what it looks like.
But it's just an effort to clean our operation up a little more.
Yeah.
All right.
So, yeah. Sometimes ham projects aren't exactly super sexy. They're just stuff that needs to get done.
Well, I talked to a friend of yours the other day. I think it was KY7KY. Is that right? Maybe not.
WY7KY. Yeah, that's Tom. Tex?
Yeah. I told him he had a better signal than you.
He probably did.
Yeah, so.
Plus, he gets on the air more. He's got more time.
He's probably going to tell you that. Yeah. All right. Well, great. Hey, it's looking good there.
Thanks, guys, keep up
the good work. Keep up the good work and give us a report when you get all it finished.
We will, for sure.
Hey, did you lay you a ground wire in that little trench when you dug it?
No, we got ground wires at each one of the towers. Why do I want to?
Well, just, it'd be like a long radio, you know?
Well, the thing is, if you start bonding towers together,
yeah,
you start developing ground loops, and you actually introduce more problems than you solve.
Oh, okay.
It's better to have your towers grounded at the tower and not try and pull ground wires around. You've seen the old adage about putting a ground bar or a bus bar on the back of your shack and then grounding things to the bus bar mm-hmm. rather than running a cable between each item. And it's basically the same thing with your tower. You don't want to run cables between the towers.
Yeah. Okay. Well, great. Thanks for sharing with us your
welcome
tower work, and I guess that's going to be something that's going on all the time, right? You'll probably never finish.
Yeah.
If you have antennas or fences, you've always got a job.
That's for sure.
I was talking with Katie recently, and she said that, y'all were kind of thinking about moving and getting a house somewhere else. So I just wonder why you're going through all this trouble.
She told me we're not going to move. We're going to die here.
Yeah.
Actually, we're digging around like we're dying here. That's it.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'll have to try to, and chances are he's going to go first. So if I'm ready to sell it, I got to find a ham that wants to move to Wyoming.
Well, that's true. Yeah. All right. Well, very good. All right. Well, guys, you're welcome to stick around the whole time. I know, Katie, you're not feeling too good. You got the crud, you said. Isn't that what the doctor said? Didn't the doctor say you had the crud? Wasn't that the official?
Yeah, her official diagnosis was my lungs sounded crappy.
Oh, okay.
Like,
you got crappy sounding lungs. That's what it was. Okay. If you need to go, that's fine. Stick around as long as you want to. But we're going to get into a segment here with Jim in just a second.
Sounds good. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, guys. All right, so, okay, well, let's do something, and we will be right back in 1 second here. Get out and be active with ICOM's new IC705 and its optional multifunction backpack. The IC705 is your perfect QRP rig, as you have base station features at the tip of your fingers in a portable package covering HF, 6 meters, 2 meters, and 70 centimeters. This compact rig weighs in at just over 2 pounds, with RF direct sampling for most of the HF bands, and IF sampling for frequencies above 25 megahertz. And it has a large 4.3-inch color touchscreen with a live band scope and waterfall. Additional features include 5 watts with the BP272, 10 watts with 13.8 volts, SSB, CW, AM, FM, as well as D-Star. It has a micro USB connector and Bluetooth, integrated GPS with antenna and GPS logger. It has a micro SD card slot. The ATM243 speaker mic comes standard, and it supports QRP operations. The perfect accessory is the optional backpack. It's the LC192. It has a special compartment for your IC705. Visit www.icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM radios. And don't forget, you should register for QSO Today's groundbreaking Virtual Ham Expo This expo will be filled with virtual exhibits and great speakers, all from the convenience of your computer, tablet, or smartphone. Visit QSO today, hamexpo.com, to register.
LDG Electronics provides state-of-the-art antenna tuners for every amateur need. From QRP to QRO, fixed stations, portable and remote, an LDG tuner will match your radio to your antenna using our lightning-fast proprietary tuning algorithms. LDG is a family-owned and operated company dedicated to bringing innovative, quality products to the amateur market. All LDG products carry a full 2-year warranty that is fully transferable. Support is only a phone call or email away. We're always here to help you. Visit us on the web at ldgelectronics.com.
All right, we're back. Okay. Well, guys, let me give you just a lead-in to what we're going to talk about next. We're going to talk a little about Whisper here, and if you follow us on Facebook, you may have seen I posted some Whisper tests I did. I've never really fooled around with Whisper in 57 years of being a ham. Of course, anybody know when Whisper was invented? It wasn't that long ago. I guess you had to wait for computers to be invented, right? Yeah. Okay, so I don't know, 20 years ago, whatever, Whisper came along, and I've never really done much with it, but when we started flying the balloons, I saw the real thing that it could do for us. You know, I mean, it was just great to be able to track our balloons and get data and information wherever they were in the world. And the little 10 milliwatt transmitter, 9,000 kilometers in range. I mean, that's what, 6,000 miles or something like it, I guess. I mean, long ways. So anyway, so I started thinking, you know, this might be good just to test my antennas. And I've got a number of wire antennas here that I use, between inverted Vs, halfway vertical, a 3/8 vertical, double zip antenna and delta loops. So I ran a little test with a Whisper, and I sent two Whisper transmissions on each antenna, and I printed out the map, and I don't know if you can see this very well, but here's the results I got on my antennas here. Hopefully that's big enough for you guys to see. It's a little small for me to see here on a monitor, but The top two are the ground-mounted verticals out there, the 3/8 wave and the half wave. And look at that. On the half wave length, nothing west. I mean, this is just, I can't understand that. It was all mainly northeast. The 3/8 vertical, which has a little bit higher angle of radiation, it picked up the west pretty good. Then at the bottom there, you can see the 40-meter delta loop. It looked like it had fairly good coverage, some out to the west, a lot better to the northeast. The delta loop seemed good. Again, about the same as the 40-meter inverted V. But then there's the last one is the 40-meter extended double zep. And it looks like it's pretty concentrated with a lot of stations picking it up in the northeast and in the west coast. So they all look pretty close to each other except the half wave, and it may be because of the low angle. I don't know. But we've got with us tonight Jim Willis, KX4TD. And Jim has done some studies and a lot of testing with Whisper, and is going to talk a little about it, and maybe he'll mention some of my results here, but he's going to tell us what he sees in his Whisper testing. He's been doing a lot of testing with it. So let's bring in Jim. Jim, how you doing down there in Georgia tonight?
Good, Tom. Thanks for having me on board.
All right. Well, you saw my pictures that I made of my spots on Whisper with the antennas. It didn't really prove a whole lot to me, but again, and I did them all within a period of about you know, 15 or 10 minutes. And I did them all about 6:30 p.m. at night. So, you know, and you know what? That 6:30, that might have been Gray Line, you know, going up to New England. I think you talk about Gray Line in your presentation there. So that may be why we had I had so much stuff going on up in New England here, you know. So tell us a little about, first of all, let's talk a little about your background there. And I know that you have really worked real hard on the Swift Whisper. Guys, when I first got the presentation from Jim, it had so much math in it and cosines and derivatives and all this calculus stuff, I felt like most people wouldn't understand it, including me. So I asked Jim to kind of, you know, trim down his presentation to where we can understand a little better. But talk to us about your findings, Jim, on Whisper.
All right, Tom, let me see if I can share that presentation. Share screen and then go here and share. Can you see that okay?
Yes.
Okay, good. So, Tom, I got to tell you, I always wanted to have a beacon. I thought that would be so cool. You set up a beacon and then you could drive around and listen for it and then what? Do a little direction finding? Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. So a long time passed, and then, believe it or not, Dave Kassler introduced me on his website to Whisper. And I thought, wow, now I can have my own beacon. So I bought the Whisper desktop transmitter from Harry at Zactech. And I got to tell you that, guys, this is an excellent product. It was an excellent design, perfect execution. It's been easy to use and very reliable. So it outputs about 200 milliwatts, and it has a GPS, and the GPS is on there to provide precise timing for the Whisper beacon. So it's set up to transmit every 10 minutes. So every 10 minutes, I send out my my message into, and now I'm scared, Tom, from your results, in-fed half-wave antenna fed by a 49-to-1
Okay.
Yeah. So you just talked about spots. This is from the Whisper website. So the important thing about Whisper is that it's actually a network of receivers that are connected via the internet to the Whisper website. And that allows it to maintain a database. And when your signal is heard by one of these receivers, then it sends out via the internet a message that has the date time group, your call sign, that's what I'm transmitting, my location in Maidenhead form, the receiver's call sign and location, and then it calculates the distance. So those two things, the date time group and distance, I'm going to call a spot. You can also go out to the website, and you can download any amount, let's say a day's worth of spots. And in this example, the one that's circled there is N5STN outside of San Antonio at 852 Zulu at a distance of 1,454 kilometers. So when I did that for a full day, it looked like this. Now, I got to tell you, I was expecting this, the band to fade, because most of us have experience on HF, and the bands fade, come and go during the day. We know that gray line's a good time, and nighttime is different from day, but it just seems to kind of fade in and out. But when I got this and I looked at it no, something else is going on. There's these large areas where the signal's not heard. And then there's the large areas where the signal is heard. And remember, this is the time across this axis. So this is April 4th, midnight Zulu, noon Zulu, and April 5th,
January, February. I guess that'd be midnight, probably.
April, yeah, on the next day. And again, this is the spot distance. So I looked at it, and I could see definite areas. So this is the nighttime. The nighttime has a range on 40 meters from about 1,500 to about 3,500 kilometers. And, you know, the first thing I looked at, Tom, was the distribution, you know, going to the northeast or whatever. And I didn't get a lot of information from that. So I wasn't expecting to see very much on this either, but it's very clear. 40 meters in the nighttime starts around 1,500 kilometers and goes out to about 3,500 kilometers. And if I then, well, this is where the, you know, studied the problem, went back to the books. During the nighttime on 40 meters, the F layer is supports propagation. And the F layer is about 400 kilometers altitude. And the transmitted signals bounce off a fairly small slice of that ionosphere and go out to 1,500 and to 3,500 kilometers. Of course, that distance between zero and 1,500 is, you know, called skip. Then if I looked at the daytime, now I've got this vertical line there at local noon, because remember the time axis is actually Zulu. Local noon is around 1,600 or so Zulu, and that's the daytime. And during the daytime, that stuff between 1,500 and 3,500 just goes away. Also, the skip distance is about 500 kilometers. So during the daytime, 40 meters propagation is between about 500 and about 1,500 kilometers. And the reason for that is during the daytime, there's another layer in the ionosphere called the E layer, and it's much closer, it's much lower altitude. On this graph, I have it listed about 60 kilometers. That's probably low. But anyway, the E layer then supports 500 to 1,500 kilometers during the daytime. And if you operated, as we all have, HF, you know about the magic of the gray line. Gray line happens at sunset and at dawn. This particular one would be dawn. You can also see at the left-hand and right-hand side, gray line and at dusk. And during that period, the skip distance sometimes goes all the way to zero. So you get some very close in near vertical incident sky wave propagation. Plus you have the 500 to 1500 and you have the 1500 to 3500. So that's the magic period for 40 meters at this phase of the sunspot cycle. And the reason that works is the F layer supports the near vertical incidence sky wave propagation. So skip distance can be as small as zero. And it also goes out to about 3,500 kilometers. And the reason for this is that the E layer is supported by sunshine. I mean, literally sunshine. And when you get to dusk, then that layer goes away. And this leads to an interesting idea. If you're operating, how many stations heard my station per hour during that day? And what you can see there is, I'm going to start here at local noon. Local noon, only about 100 stations per hour heard my transmitter. And then towards gray line, that went up, going over to midnight, up to a maximum of about 400 spots per hour. So the band would go, would seem to be dead at 100 and then, you know, quite active at 400. And this pattern was repeated day after day and month after month. So the takeaway, if you're an operator, is noon's probably a bad time to operate. Gray line is great. And at night, you get longer range. To recap, any questions there, Tom? You got Glenn?
No, I'm just trying to match this up with some of the things we saw with the balloon. You know, I hadn't thought about it a lot. With the balloon being at 44,000 feet, I was wondering why sometimes I get 9,000 miles and sometimes I only get 1,000 miles. And this is starting to make sense now. Because depending on where it is in the world and, you know, where it is in the cycle of day and night.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so I was taking a close look at your examples. The gray line was approaching. And you said they were about 10 minutes apart. I don't know the total time, but during daylight hours, you would expect close in, and then it would get mm-hmm. longer during gray line. So this is the recap. I've already said all of these things. Just about this time of day, maybe between 9 o'clock, 8 or 9 o'clock local time, the magic of the gray line takes place. Good time to operate. And then you can look at azimuthal map, a projection around my QTH. And the daytime propagation is between that 500 kilometer and 1500 kilometer circle. Nighttime starts around 1500, goes out to 3500. And then dusk covers from zero all the way out to 3,500 kilometers. So I got a question. Does this match up with your experience operating on 40 meters?
Yeah, I think it does. You know.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it really does match.
Yeah. So it was really magic for me. Now. You're on 20 meters with your, and I've given your balloon a lot of thought. Mm-hmm. First of all, I ignored multiple hops. This is the first hop propagation. And then anything after that, it's kind of spotty, but you don't get very many, I don't get very many spots beyond 3,500 on 40 meters, but I do get them out to 9,000 kilometers and even maybe 15,000.
How do you know if you're seeing multiple hop or single hop?
Yeah, that's a good question. How do you know short path and long path? It just the single hop stuff. There's lots of contacts, mm-hmm. Lots of spots, and then when you go to multiple hops, they're really few and far between.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. Any discussion, right, Tom?
Yeah, just go ahead and unshare your thing there.
All right.
Let's see if there's any questions in the chat room there. Questions about Jim's discussion there on Whisper. You know, I've noticed one thing, and I've got to see how I can. Let me see if I can bring both of us in this picture here. Yeah, that'll work. You know, one thing we've noticed in flying, when you get in between India and China, we get into what we call the stands. And the stands are, you know, Uzbekistan and Turkestan and all these stands. And the communications out there is really bad. And I think it's because probably there are not very many Whisper receiving stations in the stands. Right. So you have to count on people, you know, 1,500 miles away. So we don't get a lot of reports sometimes from the stands. Now, we've gone into and we can pick out some remote receivers from time to time in that area and pick up the balloon and decode it on WSJTX here, you know, on the computer that you're looking at the remote SDR receiver. But when you get into that part of the world, there's not a lot of communications. And we've noticed, I noticed one time, we thought maybe we were losing a balloon or we had transmitter issues because we were getting almost nothing being picked up. We'd get occasionally one here or one there. And another time around, I think it did a little better there, but it just might have been the time of day that it was over that particular area, meaning nobody picking it up versus a lot of people picking it up.
Right. The 20 meters, I did run 20 meters, whisper 20 meters for a little while, and daytime was just totally dead.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's a couple of questions in the chat room. Somebody said, have we tried 30 meters? Of course, there's all kinds of activity on every HF band. You can go to any band, and there's tons of whisper stuff going. Personally, we haven't run 30-meter whisper on any of our balloons because that requires a larger antenna. And you know, we're running a 20-meter antenna, which is shorter than a 30-meter antenna. And at some point, we may even consider going to 10-meter whisper because that cuts our antenna back in half of what we're flying right now. And right now, our 20-meter antenna, it's a whopping 1.6 grams.
Yeah.
So it's you know, it's pretty heavy.
You've done an amazing job. Congratulations on your circumnavigation.
Yeah. So.
I'm glad to see that you were able to rescue the ants.
Yeah. And, you know, Whisper is not our subject tonight. We're talking, APRS is not our subject tonight. We're talking Whisper. We've flown a balloon with both Whisper and APRS. Some people fly the balloons with just APRS. The thing is with the APRS only is you have to be in an area where there are APRS receiving stations. They're only good for about 250 miles out. And as we spend 3 days, 4 days crossing the ocean, there is no APRS. And then once you go into Africa and the stands and through there, there is no APRS. So you might not even know where the balloon is for 10 days until it hits China. The nice thing about Whisper is it can be heard just about any time of the day somewhere, and there's so many stations out there, it's going to be heard if it's working. And that's really helped us a lot. It's not much fun wondering where your balloon has been for the last 8 days, you know.
Good. Yeah, that's the magic of that network of receivers.
Yeah.
Worldwide, thousands. I don't know the exact number. Joe Taylor gave a presentation at Dayton, I think, and he listed a number of receivers out there, and it was a big number, but it's a lot bigger now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Some time ago.
Another question, is a whisper transmission about 2 minutes long? Yes, it is. It takes about a minute and, 2 minutes is 120 seconds. I think it transmits for like 115 seconds or something like that. There's a very short window where then it cycles back to the next time slot. So it takes 2 minutes to transmit a single whisper transmission. And it's very slow. It's very slow. If any of you guys know anything about baud rate, you know, back many years ago when I started in data communications, baud rate, if we had 100 or 300 baud, that was pretty fast back then. I think whisper is 1.5 baud.
Something like that.
It's a six cycle width in a band, and it's about 1.5 baud, and I think it's about, how many characters a minute is that? Is that 50 characters per minute or somewhere in that area? That's all it can transmit.
Yeah.
And what we're doing on our balloon is we're transmitting two different whisper transmissions every 10 minutes. So We're set up in time slot 0 and time slot 2, meaning minute 0 and minute 2. And we'll transmit the W5KUB call the first 2 minutes with some basic whisper information. And whisper doesn't give you a lot of information except maybe a four-digit grid square, which is a pretty big area. And then the next, and then at 2 minutes, for 2 minutes, we transmit another whisper transmission that sends a different set of calls out there. And ours would be like, it'd be something like a QM7ABC. And the Q is a channel, and the Q and the 7 is a channel and a time slot. And the M would be, in our case, it's telling us how many satellites we're actually receiving on the balloon. And in the last three digits of that second transmission, the ABC, A would mean the voltage, A equals 3.5 volts. And then the BC are the last two letters of the six-digit grid square. So in the first transmission, you get four-digit grid square. And in the second transmission, you get the last two letters of the grid square. So now you've narrowed it down to like a 2 by 3 mile box instead of a 200-mile box. So there's a lot going on with whisper, and it's just amazing how it can hear signals that you can't hear with your ear.
It is.
Yeah, let's see if there was any other. Any whisper kits available? Well, I think there probably are. Of course, the Zaktec that you've got was not a kit, I don't think, no. Right?
It wasn't. I believe they do have some kits, but I'm not certain.
I think there are some whisper kits out there. Just do a search, whisper transmitters, and you'll probably pull some up there.
Of course, any modern transceiver can, and a computer, you can turn your transceiver into a whisper beacon. I believe you've done that, Tom.
Yeah, and I was thinking about possibility of getting me a little whisper transmitter to use, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, I've got WSJTX installed here. In fact, I'm using it to receive the balloon when it's in test mode, and it also transmits whisper. So all you got to do is just hit the little transmit button on it, and it'll transmit whisper for you on any band that your transceiver will work, and that's how I ran the test, so I really don't need a whisper transmitter. I've got one.
And probably Glenn could rig up a cat control.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that...
Got it right here.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, let's see. Let's see if there's any other questions here. What do most people use for whisper receivers? Well... Hey, Don, there's a Papa Doc in here. Hey, Don, good to see you in here. He used to be one of the guys that got on Hangout with us after the show every night. But I think he goes a bit early now with a different job. What do most people use for whisper receivers? I'm using an IC7300 here. It's just your typical transceiver that's hooked with a USB cable to your computer, and it's running the whisper program, and it will receive it. And it will transmit it. So you can pretty much use any transmitter for whisper, either a standalone disk transmitter or you can use a transceiver. And let's see, receivers. Glenn and I were talking about in Nuts and Volts magazine a couple issues ago. There is a project in here to build a whisper receiver. And I wanted to do that. And Glenn, I've tried to find the programmable oscillator, and they talk about DigiKey and stuff, but I contacted DigiKey, and they can't give me that oscillator. So I don't know how much trouble I'm going to have building this or not, but we're probably going to give it a try.
Yeah, I've got that article printed, and I was looking for that too, and that chip that they mentioned, mm-hmm. It's just not available much anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, hey, I learned a lot and about Whisper tonight. I think it's interesting. It's going to play more and more roles in our balloon launches in the future. So speaking of balloon launches, here we go right here. I've got another SBS 13 balloon right here, ready to go. Our tracker is ready to go. It's all built up. The SBS is here. We've got the hydrogen. We're just waiting for the hurricanes to get out of the way and all those storms and tornadoes on the East Coast. And after all that kind of clears up, we'll launch. This launch that we're going to be doing here is not long duration. You know, we made three laps on the last balloon. We don't know if we can make that with this one. Most likely not. This one may make it around the world one time. I don't know. It may make it six times. I have no idea. But this one's going to be heavy. It's going to be a pretty heavy payload. It's going to come in around 31 grams. And that's almost twice what a normal payload weighs. The battery alone is 12.4 grams. And it's just an experiment. This launch will be to experiment with batteries. A lot of people have tried it. They say it can't be done, or they say you're only going to get 4 hours extra out of a battery. The batteries are too heavy. You can't fly them. We've been doing some testing on the ground, and we're getting 24 hours coverage with our battery. Our battery actually will hang in here 14 hours. And then, you know, we get the sun the rest of the time. Now, whether or not it's going to charge enough to get that out of it at the temperature of minus 70, I don't know. The problem is the LiPo batteries, and everybody knows this and it's in the specs, it won't charge when the temperature gets down to, say, a minus 20 or a minus 30 degrees Celsius. So it's not going to be much good if it won't charge. So we worked on some circuitry to charge it, and we worked on some design to heat the battery. And we're going to be heating the battery with convection, solar energy convection. And we've run some tests. You know, our initial test at minus 70 degrees here on Earth showed us that the battery will not charge. But then we've run some tests here to try to heat the battery, and we're seeing a 70 degree difference in the ambient temperature. There's a 70 degree difference between the air and the battery. The battery is actually 70 degrees warmer than the air. So if we get up there and it's really, really, really cold up here, hopefully we're going to get 70 degrees of heat into that battery, and hopefully we can charge when the sun's out. So we're going to see how it works. You know, the first night's going to be interesting. We'll be charged up. We'll probably launch in the afternoon. We'll see it talk all night. And then the next day is the key, because the battery's going to start running down. Next day, it'll work solar, but will a battery charge? And then the next night, it's going to be telling us if it's working or not. And
nerve-wracking those first few
days.
It's
nerve-wracking, and guess what? At that temperature, the battery may only be half efficient, 50% effective. So, you know, if it'll do 15 hours on the ground, it might only do 7 hours up there at minus 70. I don't know. So we're going to find out. It's going to be heavy. That's the reason we're going with the SBS balloon. We can carry a much heavier load.
Yeah.
The spreadsheet says we can only fly. We're only going to reach about 40,200 feet. That's going to be our maximum altitude. I'd rather be at 44, 45, but we're going to be at 40,000 maximum. That'll still get us over most storms. And guess what? It might go for months up here. I don't know. And guess what? As soon as this one comes down right here, we got the next one ready to go. And we're going to go light with it. It's going to be light, very, very light and streamlined, and we're going to fly high. The payload on this one is going to be about 32. Your typical payload is about 15 to 18 grams. We think we're going to fly this one, the entire total payload, around 6 grams. So it's going to be very light. It's going to be like that little feather on Forrest Gump, you know, it kind of floats around, you know. That little feather that floats, that's how the one after this one's going to work. So who knows? It's all up to Mother Nature. All up to Mother Nature.
That's cool.
All right. Well, hey, thanks, Jim, so much, man. And we appreciate it so much.
My pleasure, Tom. Yeah. And is there anything that we can do out here to help you with your balloons?
Oh, man, I don't know. I just don't know. There's so much unknown, you know. So much. The main thing is there's two things that make it. There's a lot of things you have to do. We do very accurate measurements to the gram of the gas and the payloads. There's two things though we don't have much control over that play the biggest part in flying. And that number one is luck. And number two is Mother Nature. So, you know, kind of, if we can stay above the storms, we'll probably stay up. But it's going to be fun.
Well, I watched, I guess, a couple of your launches, and that had me holding my breath.
Well, you know, if you saw the SBS, it's the big long balloon. It looked like it didn't have much hydrogen in it, just a little bubble of hydrogen in it. But that it has to be like it because it's going to expand. And, the gas in that balloon, every 18,000 feet, that gas will double in in volume. So if we've got, you know, 2 cubic feet in there at 18,000, it's going to be 4 cubic feet. And then at another 18,000, of course, at 36,000, the 4 is going to turn into 8 cubic feet. And I don't think that balloon will handle much more. You got to keep the expansion smaller than a balloon or it's going to pop. And so that's why everything is measured very precisely down to the gram or tenth of a gram. All right. Well, a lot of people probably, I won't say a lot of people, we had a lot of fun with the balloon, and we're still going to have some fun with it. And, you know, the interesting thing about the balloons, we made it real personal, you know. Somebody asked us, you know, how do you steer it? Somebody came up with the story. We have three ants that are piloting it, so we came up with some ants here, and the story went on, and people talked about the ants the whole flight, so we had a good time with that. We're probably going to use the ants on the next flight, and but, you know, I saw one person in Facebook say, I hope you do something next that's not a balloon. So there are starting to be people out there probably getting a little tired of the balloon, but we're still excited about it. So, yeah, we're going to do something different. I'm going to dust off my satellite station over there. Katie, have y'all got your satellite station? You got one running there, haven't you?
It's there.
Yeah.
We haven't made a QSO
on it yet. We need to have our friend Bill over here, N7QAX. He's going to give us a lesson on how to do
it. Okay, well, I'm going to get back on. I used to be on a lot. In fact, that's, you know, between satellite and working the International Space Station, that's how I met astronaut Doug Wheelock and became friends.
Right.
Talked to him so many times up here when he was up here. But I'm going to dust my stuff back off here and get back on satellite because years ago when I was on, there were some really easy satellites to work, like AO50 and some of the other FM birds, which actually died. And let's see. So they actually died. And in the linear birds, the sideband birds, are a little bit tougher to work. Now, the program I've got actually moves the transceiver frequency with the satellite, and it keeps it on frequency. So, you know, it's a little makes it a little easier, but
sure.
So, but my understanding is now today there are a lot of new satellites up. There are a number of FM satellites up that are so easy to work, and there's a lot of the linear satellites up there. So I'm going to fire back up and get back on, and maybe we'll have a contact with you guys out there.
That'd be fun. I've been seeing a lot of, you know, on Twitter, there's a lot of folks that are satellite ops, and they tweet out when they're going to, when they're going to be operating and where, especially if they're out roving. And I just saw, like, over the weekend, Sean KX9X took a road trip out in the Midwest and worked a whole bunch of people from different grid squares, I think. And so, yeah, there's a lot of fun things. So if you're – and obviously the AMSAT organization is a place to get lots of good information as well. But, yeah, it's been fun watching all the people that have been working each other and doing a variety of different things with satellites. So it definitely seems like it's a good time to be diving into it because there's a lot of activity.
Yeah, and, you know, a satellite contact is really different than your normal contacts. You know, you hear a call, you give them a call, and you give your call, and you say Echo Mike 5-5, and that's my grid square, and bam, that's the whole contact. The guy says thank you, and there's 80 more people calling. So they go quick. They go really quick like that. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm gonna open a phone line up here, man. There may be some questions on Whisper or something else we're doing here. So let me, I'm going to go ahead and bring it up. I put the number up there.
Yeah, I'm like Katie and Dwayne. I've got a satellite station and I've got the automatic antenna controller that I built and hadn't turned it on in a year and a half.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you have been a little sidetracked.
A little bit, yeah.
All right, I about got the phone system up. Now, remember, guys, we can take up to 1,000 simultaneous phone calls from 65 countries. I want all you guys calling in tonight. You guys have been very shy. You've been really shy. And I want everybody to call in tonight and get on the show. If you're international, look, if you'll go to our, if you're on our webpage at w5kb.com, if you're international, click on Contact up at the top. And then on the contact page on the left side, there's a little link you can click for international numbers. And that way you can pick your number for your country and you can call. Okay, I think our phone system is up. Let's see if our phone system's up.
Yeah, let's hear the music.
Let's see if it's up.
Tom, while I'm thinking about it, you're talking about thousands of callers this weekend. Is the QSO Today Virtual Ham Expo. Basically, it's a ham fest online, and they've got like 50 speakers lined up over 2 days, and Bill Brown's going to be doing his Send an Amateur Radio Balloon Around the World Saturday at 1945 Zulu, and of course, I'll be presenting on Sunday at 1845 Zulu, and Joe Eisenberg is also going to be doing one. He is Sunday at 1900 Zulu.
Well, they asked me a couple times if I wanted to do something, and I thought about it. First, I thought yes, but then I'm really busy here with everything going on, so. When you retire, you get really busy. I would say work as long as you can. And that way you'll have a lot of free time. So I elected not to be a part of it.
They'll have plenty of people. Good topics going on there.
So how's that going to work, Glenn? Is there a single URL or do you have to go to different URLs at different times?
No, it's online convention hosting. It's literally a virtual convention center online.
Okay.
So you go to their website and into the convention, and you know you click in the area you want to go, like for exhibitors or for the they call it a virtual lounge that you can actually get into and chat with other participants.
Uh-huh.
And then they've got the forum rooms, seminar rooms, whatever you want to call them, and they've got four of those running simultaneously, and you just kind of click the one you want to go into. It's literally an excellently done virtualization of a convention center.
Yeah.
I've been to training sessions like that. They're pretty neat because you can go into different areas, and then there's, you know, like the waiting area for main forum presenter, you know, it looks like you're walking into a theater, and then you have your speaker who comes along and does their thing, and then you can go out into different rooms and what have you, and or into the main, you know, coffee lounge and, you know, find other people there and chat. It's kind of a neat If it's similar to things I've been into, it should be nice.
I see Bill in a chat room. I typically I don't have a lot of time to read all the chat during the show, but I see Bill in here. Bill, you should have been on the show tonight, Bill. I don't know where he was, man.
Well, I'm actually going to sign off for the night, so I'm going to say goodnight to everybody.
All right.
See
well, good night.
Soon.
You and Dwayne, it was great having you on tonight. And we're going to stick around about another 15 minutes, and we'll take a couple phone calls if anybody out there gets brave enough. Katie, thank you. Thank you for being on with us tonight.
You bet. Thanks. Bye, everybody.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. No calls. I don't know.
Bill said he. Come on, you know now we know it's not just me.
Yeah, Bill said he had some audio problems tonight. I think we need to get Bill a new computer.
But yeah, one of the things we're going to be doing with that virtual is all of the sessions are pre-recorded, and then we'll have a 15-minute live Q&A session at the end of each session. Then each session will be available on demand for 30 days after the event. So if you happen to miss it, you can still go online and catch them, because there's a few that I'm definitely wanting to go see.
Yeah. Well, Glenn, do you really think that we're going to have Hamcation Orlando on in 2 weeks to talk about the upcoming Orlando Ham Fest coming up in February. We got a caller. Stand by just a second, caller. Glenn, do you think it's going to happen, or you think we're going to be in good enough shape to start having Ham Fest like in Orlando and Dayton again early next year?
I don't really know yet. I think probably around the first of the year, things will start to loosen up. We just got put under a mask order here in Mississippi today, saying that behind California, Mississippi is the number two caseload area now. So, and that's news to me.
All right.
Orlando, maybe. Dayton, probably. I think by January, February, the travel restrictions will be lifted and be a lot easier to travel and do things. But there's still, we've had a cat show was just held this past weekend, and they did the full medical routine, masks and the whole nine yards for the event. And this is in Florida, and I'm like, you guys are absolutely crazy to even attempt to do this.
All right, well, let's see who we get on the phone. I made a mistake. The phone number up on a screen is a bogus phone number. So I put a new number up there. So we had a typo in the phone number, so that's why people aren't calling. Although, we have a David call us. Hey, David, how you doing? David?
Yeah, you got it, Russ. It's good to see David.
Russ, yeah, Russ.
Man,
you fool me all the time, Russ, with that caller ID.
Yeah, I'm going to have to change phones so I can be a Tom or a Glenn or something. So
that's right. That's right, man.
No, you don't want to be me.
All right. Well, how's it going, man? Thanks for calling in, man. We can always count on you to be a part of the show here. Everybody else is kind of shy. Oh, we got another call.
Oh, with that $20 a week check you send me every time, I have to call. So
yeah. Hey, let's see who else. Let's see who else is on the phone. Who else joined Russ?
Bill Brown.
Hey, Bill Brown.
Do I know
a Bill Brown, man? Are you the Bill Brown?
WBADL.
All right, man. Oh, man, you should have been on a show tonight. You could have really helped out a whole lot, man. We had to ad lib a lot of stuff, man. We made up all kinds of stuff.
Hey, I just wanted to let you know that the space station has got an Eris event where they're going to actually the Russian.
John O'Neill, K0VW.
Wait a minute. Go ahead, Bill. There, you're talking Eris.
So the ISS has got a slow scan television event tomorrow, and I think even tonight during the any pass of the space station overhead, you can listen to 145.800 FM, and you'll hear slow scan TV. It's PD120 mode. And
okay.
If you have a slow scan TV app and can tune it in, you'll pick up some slow scan television from the space station.
Okay, that's cool. Hey, stand by a second, Bill. We've got a heap of calls coming in. Who's somebody else we haven't acknowledged yet?
You had a zero station.
K0VW.
K0. Hey, stand by a second, Bill. Give me that call again at K0.
It's K0VW.
Oh, VW. K0VW. How you doing, man?
Hey, good, Tom. Good talk with you on the 40 meters tonight.
Yeah.
Hey, just one real quick question about Whisper. If you're going to run your own Whisper beacon through WSJTX from your station transceiver, what kind of power level is recommended for that?
Well, you know, I mean, hey, we run 10 milliwatts in the balloon. People run different powers. I mean, the test I did, I ran five watts. Bill Brown, what do you think? Anybody got any comments about power levels you should run on Whisper?
Under 5 watts and 1 watt if you can do it, or less. 200 milliwatts will get you around the world just fine.
I agree with the 100 watt or 1 watt or less. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
1 watt less is really what I read. Right.
You know, hey, that just real quick. That reminds me, on Facebook, there was a guy complaining yesterday. He was running 800 watts on FT8. He burnt out his kilowatt tuner, and he couldn't understand why. Although the kilowatt tuner is only rated at, I think, 400 watts. Digital, but he was running 800 watts and it melted that tuner, man.
Yeah, something to think about. You're key down for nearly 2 minutes and that'll melt a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah. Okay,
10 watts is absolutely the most you want to run.
So give me the name again. K0VW. What's the name again?
It's John.
Yeah, John. Yeah, okay. I should remember that. I got a terrible memory. So, John, are you planning on trying to just put up a Whisper beacon or something?
Well, I'd like to try Whisper. I've been listening, of course, you know, for the balloon and all that, but I never put out a signal on Whisper.
Uh-huh.
And your presenter tonight encouraged me to maybe give that a try.
Yeah, and if you're using the WSJTX software on your computer, it will transmit also, you know. You just have to select.
Okay.
You just have to select a little button that says "Enable Transmit," and it'll transmit. Just
okay.
set your power down to like 5 watts or something.
Okay. Very good. Well, I won't take up any of your time. Thanks a lot for the info. That's very valuable. And a very good evening at 73s to everyone. It was a wonderful night to spend with you.
Yeah.
Thank you
very
much.
Hey, enjoyed working you on the 40 meter net tonight, man. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Yeah, the conditions were a little better tonight, Tom. So I enjoyed hearing your good signal up here in Wisconsin.
Okay,
so, I'll try again next week. See how we do.
Great. Okay, let's see who else is on the phone there. Who have we not acknowledged yet? Who else is on the phone we haven't spoke to?
WZ1L.
That's Bill up in Massachusetts. How you doing, Bill? Bill?
It's amazing how many people call when you give out the right number.
Down there in South Haven, just wanted to say, hey, a very interesting program this evening, Tom. I've been thinking about doing a Whisper. My question is, though, with the 7300, you just run a regular printer cable there from the computer to the radio, right?
Well, it's a USB cable, not a printer cable, but a USB cable. and audio, all the cat control and audio goes across a single USB cable. So when you open up your Whisper program and you say, I want to be on 20 meters, it'll automatically put your radio on 20 meters and it'll tune it to the right spot and everything, man. You're good to go.
Okay. Well, I'll try. Give it a try. If run into difficulties, I'll email you.
Okay. And you know, and once you get that set up, that same program, WSJT-X, same program, it's got all your other programs in it, like FT8 and, you know, your other digital programs. So you'll be able to work all the other digital stuff and Whisper and all that. You know, you'll have everything.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, the FT-991A also has that same individual, but, audio
thanks
USB
for the info.
Interface that's really
and,
cool.
We'll try and see what happens.
All right. Hey, I see a caller ID on here. Jim. How you doing, Jim?
Hey, Tom. I was doing well.
Well, that's good, man. That's Jim out in, I forget, where are you? You're in North Carolina? No. Where are you?
Louisiana.
Louisiana, okay. Yeah. Down in Louisiana. I can't keep up with everybody. How you doing, man? And let's see. You checked in. I think I talked to you tonight on the net, didn't I?
No, I didn't make it to the net tonight.
Oh, man. Must have been somebody.
This is the kind of poor.
Oh, man. Must have been somebody using your call letters then. All right, man. Well, hey, what's going on, man? Hey, did you get any rain or anything from that hurricane that went through Texas?
No, absolutely nothing.
Yeah, it all came here the last couple of days. Hey, Glenn, did you get any rain down here the last couple of days, Glenn?
Oh, yeah. A couple strong storms came through, but it's all been, you know, quick stuff.
Man, we had a frog choker here a couple of days, yesterday, I think. I mean, I never saw so much rain come down with the sun out. There wasn't a cloud in the sky. Wasn't a cloud in the sky, man. And I tell you, this place almost flooded.
And 20 minutes later, it was sunny, and I ended up mowing the lawn in the afternoon because it was so dry.
Yeah. Don is asking, does Whisper operate on a single frequency? And the answer is it's a different frequency, of course, for different bands. On 20 meters, where we're operating with the balloon, 20-meter Whisper, it's 14.0956, but what it does, it takes the bandwidth, you know, a signal is about, what, three kilohertz wide, and what it does, it sends those tones, so you can have hundreds of people on that same frequency, all transmitting at the same time, because it stretches it out through that bandwidth, very narrow, and if I've got my information right, the channels are like 6 hertz wide, and I think the balloon frequency area that we've been transmitting in, the tone is actually somewhere around 1500 hertz, so that would be your 14.0956 frequency, and then within that bandwidth, 1500 cycles up would be it. So it's kind of neat, man. It's a real neat program.
So in reality, it's one section of the band, but it's got multiple little 6 hertz slices in that band segment it's at.
Yeah.
Kind of like FT8 and FT4.
Yeah.
The band segment is 200 hertz wide.
Oh, is it 200? Is it 200? Well, I don't know where I got the 6. Maybe that's one of the other digital modes or something.
No, I mean the transmissions are 6 hertz, but the band segment is 200 hertz wide.
Yeah, you're a little weak. Hey, speak up just a little bit, Bill. Tell me about tell me about the 6 hertz and the transmission. Tell me about that again.
On 14.0956, it's 1500 hertz up from that. If you tune it, look at a waterfall display, or just listen to it. But the band segment is 200 hertz wide, so it's plus or minus 100 hertz from that 1500 hertz location.
Oh, okay.
So it ranges from 1400 hertz to 1600 hertz.
Well, I thought six. I did think six sounded very narrow, but where did I pick six up? I've read six somewhere.
Six is the width of the transmission, and so hundreds stations can be in the same 200 hertz band segment.
Oh, okay. 85 watts. I got you. Okay. So the transmission is 6 hertz wide, bandwidth wise, and okay, the channel is 200 hertz. Okay. Well, very good. Let's
see. Hey, Tom.
Yeah. Yes.
Let me play 7-3 with you.
Okay. Jim?
I'm watching. I've got local transmissions on.
I had a couple other things to do before I...
I didn't understand what you had on. What did you say you had on?
I've got local transmissions coming in. Take care. Peace.
Okay.
Peace
all right.
on you,
all right.
brother.
All right, we'll see you, Jim. 7-3 to you.
Thomas Rust.
Okay, hey Russ, go ahead, Russ.
Okay, I had just a couple ones. I know Joe K0NEB earlier tonight had posted that there is a kit out for the Whisper receiver. That was in the chat room. So uh-huh. you might want to get a hold of him and see what that's all about.
Okay.
Second one was, Glenn, I want to thank you for helping me, and I don't remember what it was you helped me with, but thank you. I remember it working real well.
Well, I'm glad it worked
so
out.
For
I'm
that.
Glad it worked well for you. We just don't know what it was, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Third one is, and I've only got one quick one left. Third one is, Tom, you mentioned the 2 minutes on the Whisper, and you were doing the Blues as a 1 and 2 time period. Could you explain that a little
Let's let Bill explain that, because I learned it pretty quick when I started working with Bill, and I didn't know much about it, and I still don't know much. Bill, you want to talk about how Whisper is being used with that second transmission, and does it have a name somebody has named it?
Well, it's a telemetry. It's a way of sending telemetry on Whisper mode. So the first transmission is your call sign, a 4-digit grid square, and a 2-digit power field that indicates how much power you're using. And then what we do for the balloons is we send a second transmission within a 10-minute window, so that that begins with a Q or a zero, and that way it's still legal because it's within the 10-minute transmission. It follows right after your identifier, and we embed telemetry in the call sign and the power field, and some methods also modify that grid square too. So then we end up with a 6-digit grid position, which is a 3-by-5-mile box instead of a 69-by-115-mile box, which is a 4-digit grid square. And then we can embed altitude up to 60-meter increments and temperature and satellite status. But it takes 2 Whisper transmissions to do that, and then I have a Python program that I wrote and there are others for different formats that are used. The Python program grabs the data from whispernet.org and decodes it, reformats it, and sends it to APRS servers directly, so a Whisper transmission from a balloon shows up as an APRS object on the map. That's how we do it.
Okay, well, thank you much for that. Now that was my problem. All right, now I've got that one figured out. Thank you for that one. And the only thing I had left, Tom, was I sent you a donation earlier this week. Did you happen to receive that? I don't have that through my PayPal account that showed that you ever received that.
Yeah, it bounced at the bank, and I was charged $50 for the return.
Okay, sorry.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah. Hey, Russ, thank you so much. We did get it. Thank you. And I want to thank everybody out there for donating for our next balloon launch. We've got the balloon right here. I just showed everybody. We're ready to go. And I've already started building up the web page. If you go to w5kub.com and click on balloon, the top one that comes up is going to be the next flight, which is going to be 21, W5KUB 21. And I've already got the donors' names out there, our supporters. You are now team members of the flight, and you're on the official web page for that flight. And we had quite a few people that donated, and I really appreciate it. And thank you so much for everybody that did.
Okay, well, thanks, Tom. And I just want to make sure you got it. I didn't see it on my end that said you got it. So I want to know. Oh, and be sure not to put my call sign on the balloon or Glenn's call sign on the balloon.
I thought we agreed on the last show we're going to put your name and call sign on the balloon, so when the thing goes down over a Russian military base, they would know who to call.
Yeah,
all right. Hey, Bill.
Thanks, Tom. I just wanted to know, and thanks for all your help on the show.
All right.
That was great.
All right.
We'll get out of here and let somebody else in.
Okay, man.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, Tom.
Yeah.
On the Whisper receiver, more than likely it's the one from QRP Labs, which is qrp-labs.com, and it's $25.
Oh, that is cheap. That's a receiver or a transmitter?
That's a receiver module. It's an SDR receiver module.
Yeah.
And they also have a whole bunch of other good little kits there. They've got a $14 Ultimate Arduino Shield kit that can be used to create a QRSS Whisper transmitter.
Well, that's
cool.
They've
got several good Whisper class kits there.
Uh-huh. Well, that's really reasonably priced, man. I thought it'd be more than that.
Yeah, oh, QRP Labs, they're good folks.
Yeah.
Joe does a lot of their, Joe Eisenberg does a lot of their kits.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Bill, I was getting really excited about Joanne's balloon, the KM6BWB-10, I think. That was, I think, a single small party balloon with, I think, your tracker. I thought for sure she was going to make it around the world, and the last spots we saw were just east of Japan, and it's been enough days, she should have already made it here, right?
Yeah, it most likely didn't make it across the Pacific. As you know, your one balloon was last heard off of Japan. That's a tough area to go across.
Yeah.
She had two of those silver Mylar party balloons.
Okay, that's right.
Attached to
she used a different configuration. She made them in the Mickey Mouse config, right?
Right, right.
She tied them together.
Been tying them on top of each other, but she decided to try it this way, and it worked phenomenally well.
Yeah.
And she had an 18-day flight out of it, so, and went from California all the way to Japan, so at about 35,000 feet, so she did great.
She did really well. You know, that first one that you launched for us was a single silver Mylar balloon, and that's the one that made it all the way to Japan. And we watched the altimeter. We watched it when it hit a storm. I saw it going down, but it got dark on us before it went all the way down. So we didn't know if it went down that day or if it made it back up. We saw it going down, but it never showed back up. So we made it to Japan on just a single little balloon. And that's the interesting thing about these balloons. Again, it's Mother Nature and luck, I think. I mean, you know, on that balloon launch that Joanne did, I think you said they launched 12 balloons. Five of them were the SBSs. And after 2 days, I think only one SBS was still in the air. And and it didn't make it. So, and that's about the results we're getting with them, is 1 out of 5 makes it around the world. But, you know, what I was going to say is, I think 1 out of 10 of the small party balloons may make it around the world. I mean, you've done it.
It depends on the weather.
Yeah.
To avoid the storms. You need to train more sky ants. They have a sky ants institute, and you can loan out sky ant recruits to different
Yeah. And, you know, our problem was we got in areas of no wind. We were not moving, and there would be 50 mile an hour wind 2,000 feet below us, I think. If we just had some way to decrease altitude and get in that wind and get out of Dodge, you know, but then there's no way to put it back in.
Well, when you're ready to go up to higher levels, I've got your next pilot right here.
All right. Well, that'll take a much bigger balloon.
Much.
Yeah.
She's actually over the weight limit. She's 15 pounds.
Yeah. Well, I think she's heavier than that chicken I showed last week being launched. Yeah. All right, well, guys, we've been in here an hour and a half tonight. I want to thank everybody for being in here. And Bill, I hadn't heard from you much lately, man. I don't know if you've been busy or just ignoring us here.
No, Microsoft had a update on my computer automatically, and after that, the audio stopped working. All my audio settings were messed up, so it took me a while to get it back to normal when I tried this evening.
Yeah, I had the same problem here this yesterday and today.
Yeah, this last update took out my lab computer, and it had to be rebooted a couple times before it started working right.
Yeah.
That's what I had to do. It took a good hour and a half to get it, the audio to work again.
All right, we're going to go ahead and close the show down, and Bill, stick around a second. I want to talk to you, but we're going to close the show down. Thanks, everybody, for calling in, and... we'll see, Bill. You're not on our. You can stay on the phone, Bill. You can stay on the phone. Thanks, everybody, for joining us tonight, and we will see you next week. Don't forget about our 40-meter net next Tuesday, 5:30, and then our show again at 8:30. 73, everybody.
Night.